Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price. And it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Hope your day is off to a great start. NASCAR had a bad weekend. On the heels of having a couple of good weekends where they decided to say, we're not going to do that flag anymore. You can't bring it into the track. When NASCAR is moving into a new era where we're not about that, if you're about that, stay away. Then, of course, we know what happened on Sunday at Talladega where Bubba Wallace found a noose hanging in his garage. Or he didn't find it. A team member found it, and it was brought to NASCAR's attention. And we spent a great deal of the day yesterday talking about the situation that Bubba Wallace was in, of being in Alabama, surrounded by Confederate flags outside the track, a Confederate flag flying over the top, and then somebody doing that inside of his garage. Somebody, by the way, who almost certainly is an inside member of NASCAR. The access to garages is very limited under normal circumstances, but now we're talking about coronavirus situations where even fewer people, so somebody on the inside almost certainly has done that. And then we fast forward to yesterday when the race is being run. All of the drivers, Kevin Harvick had the idea of having all the drivers push Bubba Wallace's car out to the front of the grid in a moment of solidarity. Jimmy Johnson had the idea of having all the drivers stand with Bubba Wallace and take that photograph. And it was an incredibly powerful visual. Watching that take place yesterday, the race is run. Bubba Wallace finished 14th, kind of, you know, top half of the field. There's 40 cars. He finished 14th. And then, of course, there's Bubba Wallace, who in the middle of all of this, LZ, has to deal with being a pioneer, has to deal with people doing despicable acts of racist, threatening his life, people surrounding the track with a symbol that means one thing and one thing only. And then he has to go out there and drive that car and make statements and do everything else. It's just an amazing day for him to be able to handle it as well as he did.
Yeah, listen, he's a remarkable person for a lot of reasons. You know, I sent you guys a photo yesterday. Facebook reminded me of a work environment in which I was the only black person. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, it wasn't hostile. They weren't calling me like names. There wasn't a Confederate flag in a green room or anything like that. But you're aware that you're by yourself. And, you know, you're someone on an island in certain areas of life. And it could be isolating at times, and it could be lonely at times. And I'm going to imagine for Bubba Wallace, you know, he may experience some of those same sort of feelings from time to time. And he's in a lot of ways, you know, when it comes to, you know, worldview, perhaps when it comes to just some of the simple things, you know, like I'm ashy. Anybody got any cocoa butter? No. Okay. That's my mom. Like, you know, little things like that, you know, that he's by himself. And so to me, when you enter a field, a profession, and you know you're going into an environment in which you might be the only one, that's already taxing as it is. It's already like an incredible thing to do. Now he's taken this platform of his and he's looked at his sport and he says, we need to do better here. That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. That's remarkable, because you know as soon as you poke that bear, oh, that bear is going to fight back. That bear is going to fight back. Remember the day that he was driving a car that said Black Lives Matter in that race, someone immediately had a car painted that said Blue Lives Matter.
Right.
Now, this doesn't mean that, you know, Kyle Weatherman, the driver of that car, you know, is anti-black or racist or anything like that. But you can't tell me that wasn't a pushback.
Of course it was.
You're not going to sell me on that. You're not going to sell me that it wasn't a pushback. And that was immediately, right? Immediately. And then the following race, there's the noose. There's the circling of this track with the Confederate flag. There's the flag flying overhead. He is a remarkable man to deal with all of this. And he hasn't cursed anybody out, at least not on you know, in front of the camera.
That in and of itself is remarkable, because who wouldn't just be furious and want to tell everybody, you know, just to get lost in different phraseology, obviously. But it was, visually speaking, seeing those other drivers push the car out, seeing the picture that he took while he was standing on his car, and the sea of other drivers and pit crew members behind him, it looked great. But I'll be honest, one of the very first thoughts that went through my head, LC, was, you know what? One of the guys in that picture is probably one of the guys that hung that noose in the garage, because we just don't have a ton of people that have access to there. And the person that did that is probably standing out there with him right now. I just couldn't get that thought out of my mind.
Well, it's because it's true. You shouldn't get it out of your mind. It is true. But you know what, bro? That's how racism works. That's how this thing works now. You never know who's in cahoots, because the KKK wears three-piece suits. Public enemy. You know, we have been working with people who harbor very ill thoughts when it comes to a whole list of conversations. And you may not know until something pops off. Every single Karen, think about it. Every Karen and Barbecue Becky and every single one of those people who gets busted on camera, like going off in a ridiculously racist sort of way, gets exposed. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you they got people in their lives that are like, What? Barbecue Becky is like my best friend.
Right.
You know? Not Travis, of course. Not Travis. But you know what I'm saying? Like, think about it. The woman in Central Park who was trying to lie and say that her life was being threatened because she wouldn't put her dog on a leash. That woman got some minority friends or colleagues or people in her life that are like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's how you roll?
That's how you roll, but they wouldn't have known if it wasn't for that moment. So, yeah, you know, it is unfortunate, but that's just the way life goes, man.
You know, I'll say this too, LZ, and we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about this and just talking about the challenge ahead for NASCAR, but both generally speaking, because of the culture that it has long allowed to fester and bake and become what is the public face of its sport. And then the guys that are actually running the sport, the guys that have to make these decisions. I do think the way that at least so far, the way that they've gone about this has been good. And Ryan McGee wrote an interesting piece on ESPN.com earlier today. He's going to join us at 9 o'clock to talk about this, but NASCAR in the past has tried to make stuff like this go away. They maybe would have tried to just bury it and not have it become a story. Instead, they put it out. Instead, they bring in the FBI. Instead, they said, this is not going to tolerate. We're going to push back on this. Like you said, the flag was going to fight back. And when it started to happen this weekend, NASCAR, publicly at least, did not back down. They are continuing to fight. They are continuing to say, hell no, we're not going to do this. The sport is changing. We need to continue to move forward on this. I think they deserve some credit for that, for digging in and not trying to say after this weekend that, well, you know, we got to continue. They're aggressively fighting back in this stuff, and I think that that is worth mentioning.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, I'm not trying to be such a cynic that I can't respect and appreciate what happened yesterday, you know, on a multitude of levels. But I also know that the real fight isn't with the noose. I know that the story that put him on the front page of everything wasn't about the noose. I know that LeBron James didn't initially, you know, tweet back at him because Bubba Wallace came out and spoke out against the noose. He spoke out against the Confederate flag, the Confederacy, which is deeply rooted in NASCAR. Deeply. You know how we know this? Because you have to have a band for the flag. You have to actually go out and say, hey, let's not do that anymore.
Yeah.
So as amazing as that display was, Travis, that was in response to his life being threatened with the noose. We still got fight's going to look like when it comes to the flag and the Confederacy and what that represents. That's still the fight.
The challenge that NASCAR has too is because they have a unique thing. You don't see when you go to a Dodger game and you pull into the parking lot, there isn't a sea of Confederate flags. When you go to a Cubs game or a Yankees game, that's not what it is. If you go to a Laker game or an LAFC game, you're just – this sport, and it's not necessarily a Southern thing, because if you go to a race out at Fontana, and when they're running out there at that track, there are Confederate flags. It is that that sport has allowed it to go, and way too long. And now they have to deal with fighting the flag. They have to deal with the people who believe that this is a part of the sport, or at least they're trying to sneak it in under the guise of this is part of the sport. And they're finally willing to have this fight. But this is entirely unique to its sport. No other sport has this, at least not in this country, where an aggressive sign of hate and racism is flown outside of every track. This is a challenge that there's not another sports league in this country has had to deal with this particular element of it. This is new to them, and Bubba Wallace forced their hand by saying something, rightfully so. But this is just the beginning of this. You know, who knows what Talladega looks like in 2021? I can tell you this, it won't be free of Confederate flags. It's not going to happen that quickly. But the fact that they're at least finally starting to do this, I think, is a step in the right direction. A step that, I quite honestly, I said it at the time, I'm surprised they decided to take it. Maybe they had no choice, but they at least made the right choice.
Yeah, they did. And, congratulations to Bubba Wallace, because he's got more brothers and sisters watching NASCAR, and I think in the history of the sport. You know, he's like Tiger Woods of NASCAR, except he actually says, I'm black.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bubba Wallace has been far more willing to take a stand than Tiger Woods ever has. Let's take a listen very quickly to Jimmy Johnson here. Again, this is one of the bigger names out there, a multiple-time Series Cup champion, and his reaction to how many people were involved with that pre-race demonstration.
Until we started walking and I could see every driver there and looked back and saw each team jump off the wall and fall in line. To go back to the rain delay, first thing I did is looked at my phone and saw the photos, and to see how many people were on pit road showing their support for Bubba, that warmed me up tremendously. It was hard to really know it in the moment. You know, we're obviously out there on the grid and without fans in the stands. It's a much different environment. But as I looked over my shoulder and as I saw the photos after, you know, I realized the power of that statement, how many people were involved.
LZ, what do you think the reaction from the fans would have been had there been fans in the grandstands? Had this been a normal environment, a non-coronavirus environment, you've got, you know, tens of thousands of people there, the reaction to Bubba Wallace would have been what?
Yesterday would have been a huge applause. There would have been standing. There would have been cheers, because yesterday was about pushing back against the noose. Yesterday was about letting Bubba Wallace know we won't tolerate your life being threatened in this racist fashion. That was yesterday was about. Yesterday was about that. But Bubba Wallace was talking about that flag, man. And when your sport is somewhat contingent upon the willful ignorance of a fan base in terms of that flag, and you got this brother out there saying, take that flag down, and now that might impact the bottom line, you know, that's Kaepernick territory right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we're talking about here. And, you know, hats off to NASCAR for saying, you know, we're going to rally around Bubba and we're going to stand with him. But, you know, trust, that display yesterday, as beautiful as it was, comes on the heels of another display that was happening, in which the Confederate flags were being driven around encircling the racetrack, like it was at a Klan rally or something, where the flag was flying overhead and they said, defund NASCAR. Like, that's the real fight. Say, we don't want you threatening the life of one of our drivers. That's a sensible sort of, you know, statement to make and get behind, and no one feels like it's controversial, because that won't affect the bottom line.
Two more races coming up this weekend.
We don't want people, yes, to have people say, we don't want your flag anywhere in our area. That's different, man. That's different. And I spoke to a gentleman, Dr. Franklin, yesterday, and he talked about the fact that when Talladega started racing in Talladega, Alabama, he saw so many Confederate flags pop up, he thought he was in the Civil War. That's what he told me.
It's a unique problem with that sport, for sure. And like I said, they got a couple more races this weekend, so I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it moving forward. All right, baseball is back almost. One last little hurdle to get over, but the owners are going to get what they want, the players are going to get what they want, and everybody is leaving unhappy. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. I'd love to be the guy that's super excited about the return of baseball. I'd love to be the guy that is fired up that MLB plans to hold a 60-game season that's going to begin around July 21st once the players sign off on health and safety protocols and to pledge their arrival at home stadiums. But nobody got it right, LZ. Nobody actually did anything to try to speed this process up. It's just that the owners ran out the clock to get exactly what they wanted, which is a schedule of about 60 games. They don't have to pay anybody to go into those 80 or 100-game schedules that would have made it somewhat legitimate. I guess I'm excited that baseball is on its way back, and we'll have it here in about a month, but no credit to anybody for actually trying to accelerate this and get it right. This was just the residue of letting the clock hit triple zero.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awful ending to a – it's an awful beginning, rather, to a season that's going to have an awful ending, if you will. And, you know, obviously we all want the Dodgers to win the World Series, but not like this.
Right.
You know, not with a – 100 games lapped off the regular season, you know, and it's murky and it's filled with like distrust. And it's already bad enough. We likely won't be able to have a parade for any championship team. It's already bad enough that, you know, people are going to want to put an asterisk by any champion this season because of all the stoppage and the awkwardness and the abbreviated seasons for all the sports. Like this sports world in general, we got enough stuff to deal with. Why are you going to add a labor dispute on top of it? Why do that? It's already challenging enough. We're already worried, Travis, that, you know, we may have to stop and start depending upon if there's a second wave to this or not, where there's no fans in the stadium. People have lost businesses that were built around stadiums that all of a sudden now revenue just dried up and employees are furloughed and owners are wondering if they're going to be able to reopen again. We've already got enough. And well, then you're going to add a labor dispute to this?
They don't care.
Terrible.
I mean, it really is as simple as that, is that they truly do not care. That the owners of these teams, this is merely a property in their portfolio of things that they own. And they have no feeling for, oh, we need to do this for the betterment of the game. Because you're right. Let me back up a little bit. The NBA is going to crown a champion, and it's going to be odd. Because we're going to have the last couple of weeks of the season played in a neutral site in Orlando. We're going to have the playoffs played in front of no fans in a neutral site, and it's going to be weird. But the fact of the matter is, they're going to have played the vast majority of the season, and they're going to play a playoff format that is very similar, if not identical, to what they always have done. And we're going to get a champion. And I, as I sit here right now at 7:20 in the morning on June 23rd, the champion's going to be the Bucks, the Lakers, or the Clippers. It's going to be, just because the best team in the NBA, and certainly one of the two or three best teams in the NBA, usually wins the championship. That's going to happen. Football is going to be weird because we're going to play it without fans. Football is going to be weird because of all the coronavirus outbreaks that are inevitably going to happen, and guys are going to be coming in and out of the lineup. Guys are going to miss games because they're in quarantine, and it will be odd and strange. But guess what's going to happen? They're going to play 16 games. They're going to have their playoffs, and we're going to crown a champion, and we'll all be okay with it. Baseball is putting out this bastardized version of itself that is just absolutely terrible. It is a 60-game season, which is about a third of the games. It introduces randomness into a sport that already has arguably too much of that to begin with, certainly in smaller sample sizes. And when you're playing a third of your season, we've talked about it before, this is the equivalent of about a five-game NFL season. So you can't tell me you know who the best football team is in 5 weeks. You don't know. We see it all the time. LZ, you're a Lions fan. How many years ago was it where they started like 6-0 and were like, oh, they finally figured out. I think they finished 7-9. You know what I mean? It's just weird stuff happens like that. Somebody's going to win the MVP, and we're going to go, that doesn't count at all. Somebody's going to win a Cy Young. That doesn't count at all. And this is what really sucks. The Dodgers could win the World Series, and it really won't count. It really won't. I know that we'll be excited about it. I know that we'll watch the games. And if they win, they're going to pour champagne on each other's head and throw a party and wear the goggles and the whole thing. And it'll be kind of cool. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing if they would have beaten the Red Sox a few years ago or the Astros a few years before that or gotten past the Nationals last year and advanced into the next round. If you've got a 60-game season, if you've got a fraction of what you usually do, it doesn't count. These other sports, it's going to be weird, but they're playing all of their games. Baseball's the only sport where they're not going to play all their games. They're not going to play half their games. They're going to play about a third of their games. It's just incredibly stupid. I'll watch. I'll care if the Dodgers get involved. But if somebody says to me, you know that Dodger World Series in 2020, you know that one doesn't count, right? I'm not going to have a good argument for why it does, because it doesn't.
Yeah, and that's disappointing. And it's frustrating because, you know, how many more of these World Series do we need to be snatched from us by things that was out of our control? We've lost one to cheating, you know, Houston Astros, and now COVID-19, you know, may snatch one from us because they've lapped 100 games off our season, or may snatch one off of us because expected. Even if we won 60-0 and we win the World Series, it's going to be remarkable. But the people are still going to be like, eh, eh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's like, what, a third barely of a season? Like, it's so frustrating. And then on top of that, when you realize that the reason why it's going to be like a third of the season isn't because, you know, because the virus didn't allow anything prior to that to happen. No, this is a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah.
It's like... I'm so blown away by this, Travis, because the communications major in me, the marketing guy in me, the storyteller in me knows what could have been if they had just done it right. What they could have had if they had just done it right. What was theirs in the palm of their hands if they had just done it the right way. To see all that capital just squandered for a labor dispute that you don't have to have for another 2 years just blows me away.
I mean, they had a chance to play games for a few weeks, maybe even longer, and be by themselves. I mean, look at golf, look at NASCAR, look at some of these other sports that were able to get back out there, social distance. We know that they're playing baseball in Korea. We know that they're playing baseball in Japan. They could have figured it out. It's not like we just got a green light, like you mentioned, from the infectious disease experts saying, okay, now we can start figuring out what's next. We've known what's next. We know what needs to take place, and they were arguing about money. They could have had this stage to themselves, and now, because of the clock, because of the timing, because of the calendar, their regular season is going to go up against the NBA playoffs, the regular season of the NFL, the Masters, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and everything else that couldn't get played during the summer or the spring that we usually do, that's getting shoehorned into the fall, where the World Series would kind of pop up on its own and say, okay, for a week or so, I'll watch the World Series. It's going to be going up against everything. And everything that we like more than baseball to begin with is going to get pushed back, and that's entirely on them. I'll watch. I'm a baseball guy. I want to watch Mike Trout do his thing. I want to see how good Mookie Betts is night in and night out because, you know, I didn't watch every Red Sox game, and I will watch just about every Dodger game. I want to see how good that dude is because I've heard nothing but amazing things. But way to go, baseball. You did it again. In the middle of hundreds of thousands of people dying and losing their job, you guys made it about yourselves. So well done. You don't care. I'm fully aware of that. I love your sport. I'm going to come back anyway. But don't expect anyone else to really be all that fired up because you guys got it done, because you didn't. The calendar got it done.
I haven't been this disappointed, Travis, in sports since the Detroit Lions drafted 6 consecutive wide receivers.
Yeah, they did do that, didn't they? I don't know a lot about being a football general manager, but drafting the same position 6 times in a row seems like a bad idea to me. What do I know? But that just seems like a bad plan.
Yeah, I don't know if it was 6, but I do know a lot of time drafting a wide receiver over and over and over again. And when we finally got Calvin Johnson, we wasted him. That's how I feel about baseball right now.
That, yeah.
You know, we finally got an opportunity in which you could be the superstar, you could be the prom queen, and you decided to stay home because your nail polish wasn't right. Like, this is what it feels like. Like, I'm like, do you not understand what you could be right now?
Obviously not.
It is
obviously
what it is.
Not. Yeah. Jim Bowden, former Major League Baseball general manager, friend of the program. He's going to join us next. Tell us what we actually might see on the field when they get going in about a month. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social Security? Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
All right. Baseball, it seems, finally has a plan to return to the field. We're going to get about 60 games. They're going to start on July 24th, assuming the union signs off on some safety protocols and some logistics. Joining us right now to talk about all of it is Jim Bowden, who is the general manager of the Cincinnati Reds and the Washington Nationals. You can hear him on Sirius XM Radio as well. Jim, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Baseball's coming back, so now I'm excited. We're going to have both the NBA and MLB starting at the end of July, so I'm ecstatic right now.
Absolutely. Now, Jim, I have a question for you. This is a very important question, so I want you to listen carefully. Do I need to wear a full Dodgers jersey, or should I cut in thirds? Because there's only 60 games. I'm trying to figure out what's the proper way to celebrate.
I would say a full Dodger jersey with bets on the back.
It's a good choice. It's a good choice.
So that's a bad choice. Not a bad choice. Not a bad choice at all. So what can we expect in terms of quality of play?
The truncated spring training, which I think by 5 o'clock we're going to get the approval from players from what I'm being told. So that means that there's going to be just a little over 3 weeks of spring training. I experienced that when I was GM of the Reds back in 95. And I will tell you that it will be difficult to get the pitching ready to go. The hitters' timings won't be there because they're going to need another 10 days after that. So it's going to be tricky is the first 10 days. But with a 60-game schedule, you don't have a lot of time to make adjustments here. So the key is going to be the teams that have the most pitching depth are going to have an advantage. The teams that have the best bullpens are going to have an advantage. So when you talk about the normal 11 or 12-man pitching staffs, I think it's going to be pitchers 12 to 15, 12 to 16 that could be the difference makers early on. And then when you get 10 games into the schedule, I think you'll see the final 50 games will be what you're used to seeing.
Jim Bowden joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. Jim, who has the most on their plate going into a season of 60 games? Is it the manager? Is it the general manager? Is it the trainer who's got to try to find a way to keep all these guys healthy? Who's got the biggest change in their normal job playing only 60 games?
I would say it's the manager. I mean, look, everyone's making adjustments. Everyone's working as a team, of course. But there's a lot of pressure on the manager here more than ever because you can't get off to a slow start, right? I mean, if you look at the Washington Nationals start last year, after 60 games, they would not have made the playoffs and they won the World Championship. So it's going to be very important in the truncated spring training that the managers get their teams ready as quick as possible. And then having a sense of urgency. You know, when you're managing a 162-game schedule, you're thinking a lot about rest, and you're trying to give a guy a day off, and you're trying to prepare for the whole season. This is a sprint. So there's more of a sense of urgency than we've seen before. So I would say a little bit more pressure on them. You know, it was interesting. I talked to Aaron Boone last night, the manager of the New York Yankees, and I asked him how he was going to prepare for spring training because obviously not going to Florida and Arizona, you know, it's and you're working out of Yankee Stadium, it's going to be difficult. There's only 5 mounds to work from. And, you know, he told me basically what they're going to do is split their roster into 2 teams, Team A and Team B, use both clubhouses, the home and visiting, and then they're going to start right out of the gate by starting just to play inter-squad games. And just to work it like that and just live BP and just try to bring it as quick as possible. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch how each of these managers and organizations kind of handled this situation. You know, I know back in 95 when I went through the truncated spring training, we ended up in first place, but we were 3-8 to start the year. Now, granted, we had enough games to overcome it, and we won the division and played the Braves in the League Championship Series. But if I had to do it over, we would have done spring training a little bit differently. You know, I learned from that, and I think it's going to be very important for these clubs to do the best they can to get guys ready and make sure they have their depth players ready, because they're going to play a big part early on.
Who loses? Like, in terms of franchise, in terms of teams, who loses most in terms of a 60-game season, the respect that could have come from a certain amount of success, maybe where they are in terms of wins and losses, if you're a pitcher or home runs? Like, who are some of the losers from this abbreviated season?
That's a great question. No one's asked me that. Players that are suspended, because players like Domingo Germán, you're not coming back now. Like, now your suspension's blown your whole season because they're not going to prorate your suspension, so you lose. Players that are free agents, you know, the Dodgers with Mookie Betts. I mean, you have them now for 60 games instead of 162. Hopefully you have playoff games as well. But teams that have impending free agents, the Phillies with JT Realmuto, I mean, those are real tough losses. And then teams that have salary arbitration eligible players, they're going to get a full year of service time, and all of a sudden it's going to be their fifth year of arbitration, and you're only going to get 60 games out of that. That's expensive. So I think those would be the biggest losers. And then at the end of the year, when you ask me the question again in October, I'll tell you that the really good teams that didn't make the playoffs ended up being losers because the truncated season took their opportunity away, and that's going to happen. I mean, the one fun thing about a 60-game schedule is literally anybody can win. And that, all you got to do is get off to a good start, and you have a legit shot of getting to the playoffs. But on the other side, there's going to be a team like the Nationals were last year. There's going to be a really good team that, for whatever reason, gets off to a slow start and doesn't have enough time to make it up, and that's going to really be a punch in the gut to a team like that.
Jim Bowden is our guest here on the morning show. Jim, you talked about how teams are going to need to go to their bench early, and guys are, you know, the depth that you have on your roster is going to be incredibly important because of the small schedule. Do the Dodgers have an advantage because not just do they have depth, but they have a bunch of different guys that can play multiple positions. They have four or five of their regular players can play a lot of different spots. Does that give them a competitive advantage?
Yeah, huge advantage. Yeah, I mean, I think of the teams that have advantage, there's no doubt that Dodgers, Yankees, Rays kind of really stand out to me, Oakland Athletics. Those teams really stand out to me. And it's not just the position players, because that doesn't concern me as much as the pitching, but the Dodgers have loaded arms. And they've got guys that were going to start the year in AAA that are big league pitchers, and now they'll start in the big leagues. And so they've got some serious depth there to go along with the veteran leadership. And to your point, if someone's timing is off early on, the Dodgers have enough depth in the outfield and the infield to overcome it. Somebody's cold, it's okay. We have depth. We have that extra guy. We have Pollock. We have Peterson. We've got, up and down the depth that they have. So Hernandez. So I don't think there's any doubt. Dodgers were heavy favorites to win the West before. They're going to be heavy favorites now to win the West again. I think they position themselves in a really good fashion and by design. I mean, Andrew Friedman, as much as we want to talk about many of his great acquisitions, including, you know, Mookie Betts and Muncy and some of these moves, the thing that Andrew has done since he's been there is he's built that depth. He's given you 15, 16 pitchers at all times that can get outs at the big league level. And he hasn't been afraid to hold on to extra outfielders, extra infielders, guys that would play every day on other teams. So that will play, I think, a huge advantage for LA down the stretch.
Who do you think has the most difficult job ahead? Terry Francona, brand new manager, got free agents, or Dave?
Commissioner Manfred. I mean, this is a tough job ahead because, you know, this process was so bad, and now you're about to negotiate the next CBA. I mean, you just did a deal where the players gave up the universal DH, although they may still add that, I'm being told. But they gave up $25 million in guaranteed playoff money. They gave up $33 million the clubs were prepared to forgive of player advances. I mean, you gave up expanded playoffs, and the commissioner's got to deal with that. I mean, he's got to deal with probably an arbitration case coming up against them while negotiating a CBA. I mean, he's got a real tough job ahead of him because this process was ugly. The good news for us, for the three of us, is the fact that, hey, we get to watch baseball and talk baseball again. We don't have to worry about this. But Commissioner Manfred, no, he's not going to get to sleep for a couple years.
Jim, what do you think happens to the guys that win awards this year, whether it's an MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, or whatever? Is it going to be looked at with a little bit of side eye through history, or will we kind of lose context of this and just look back and, oh, in 2020, Mike Trout won his fifth MVP or fourth MVP or whatever it is? Or are we going to like, yeah, but that was a 60-game season? How is history going to treat that?
Yeah, it's going to treat it like, oh, 2020, the year of the pandemic. Yeah, it's not the same. It won't be. You know, we'll look at the world champion. Yeah, they won the world champions. Great. It's not the same. We'll have an asterisk next to this entire year, both in sports and in society. This will be a year none of us ever forget. This is one of those life-changing years. But, yeah, for sports, I mean, whoever wins the MVP, I mean, you're going to sit there and go, well, you did over 60 games. If we even have awards, I don't know if the baseball writers have even announced if they're going to do it or not. I hope they do. They should do it. But, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, you're not going to forget it. I mean, I remember back in 81 when we had the split season in that work stoppage, and the team with the best record, the Reds, didn't even make the playoffs because they did it in two different. I mean, that's an asterisk year, you know. 94 got completely canceled, so no one cares about that year. But, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that 60 games, we're all going to look at it a little side-eyed.
Jim Bowden, former general manager of the Nats and the Reds. You can hear him on Sirius XM Radio as well. Jim, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, sir.
That'd be weird. I mean, if it's a guy like Trout or Bellinger or Betts, you go, okay, they would have won it anyway. But if you get some weird MVP or some weird Cy Young Award winner, that's going to be looked at as a complete joke, right?
I mean, it has to. But, I mean, there are other aspects of the joke, too. Like, Cy Young, MVP. What about Rookie of the Year?
Sure.
You know, like, how do you – I mean, like, do you even bother with rookies?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's so little time for them to try to learn this season. And if you're trying – if you're a good team like the Dodgers, I mean, how long do you mess around with Dustin May? Or do you just put him on ice and just say, you know what, next year? Those are, like, real questions to me.
Dave Roberts has his hands full. I mean, now he's got a lot of options, but he's going to have to make a ton of decisions. We'll try to unpack all of this. Take It or Shake It is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, LZ, let's start with a tennis topic here. Novak Djokovic tested positive for the coronavirus. That will be the end of the U.S. Open. Take It or Shake It.
Shake it.
The show will go on.
I believe that the tennis tournament, the U.S. Open, will still happen. But what Djokovic's irresponsible behavior has done is not only ended up with him with a positive coronavirus test, but several other top players have tested positive who were with him this past week. And I think what it's done is added one more layer of caution to the sports world in general. You know, we look at college football and we see all the players who are testing positive. Obviously, we know about the NBA, questions about the NFL. And now here you are in the world of tennis, a sport where there's no contact, right? This isn't a contact sport. You're on the sides of the nets. You never have to touch each other. And the number one player in the world has the coronavirus. So if you're someone like Serena Williams and you got a little baby and you just posted a video tomorrow, I can't wait to get back. And Novak Djokovic has the damn coronavirus, that's going to give you pause.
Yeah, if guys are spreading this around in tennis where you're standing that far apart from each other, then I'm very skeptical about what some other sports might look like. Hopefully this is a blip, but part of it too, you saw the pictures that were being taken, not a lot of social distancing going on at that event. So hopefully, if nothing else, we learned something right there. All right, let's move on to Major League Baseball. We are going to have a season which starts about 1 month from today. This will be the most difficult season for Major League Baseball managers ever. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Oh, shake it.
Oh, shake it. It's not going to be that
shake
hard.
It.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Throw the ball, hit the ball.
Shake it. I would say as long as I can read and I know what happened during the Great Depression and all of that, I'm still going to keep that era as the one, as the most difficult, because not only did you have people who were, you know, obviously barely making it, you know, day to day, the players were broke too. Mm-hmm. Like baseball players weren't making a lot of money back then. They weren't making a lot of money in the 60s and 70s and 80s. They're just not starting to get real money like that. So I still take that era as being more difficult, but no doubt what they're embarking on right now, it's going to be tough. There's no doubt about it. But they have the cushion, Travis, of knowing that most people are going to look at the season with a big asterisk anyway. And so the pressure is there, but they know it's not going to be damaging to their legacy.
It's going to be really interesting because I, over the last 10 or 12 years, my opinions of managers has changed. And it's changed in this regard that it used to be, okay, when do I start the runner? When do I pitch out? When do I pull my pitcher? Do I leave this guy in? Do I use a pinch hitter right here? Do I leave my guy in? Do I take? There was a whole bunch of baseball decisions that needed to be made on any given night. Now, the vast majority of teams have taken those decisions away from the managers. They're decided by the math. That the math says this guy faces this guy, that guy comes in against that guy. You never hit and run. You don't bunt. You do this. So a lot of those situations have been taken off the table, and the job has become more of a job based on interpersonal relationships. It's an important job, but your job is more making sure that your guys know what they do, making sure that everybody's feeling pretty good about what you're asking them to do, that that's become the essence. This now, though, the math is irrelevant. We don't have math on how to do this over 60 games. Part of the reason that the Dodgers, I think, have struggled in the postseason at certain points is because of their reliance on the math doesn't work in the short term. That over 162 games, that Dodger math is bulletproof, right? They win that division every single year. But over a short period of time, i.e. playoffs, you get bounced out. Well, 60 games is not a full season. So now maybe I do. Do I? This guy's 0 for 5. This guy hasn't gotten a hit in 4 games. Do I bench him? Well, you would never bench a guy if he went hitless in 4 games over 162 games. But, you know, 4 games out of 60, that's a significant percentage of the season. I need to make that call. The math is kind of out the window at this point. There's a whole bunch of decisions that no one has ever had to make that every team's going to have to make this season.
No, you're absolutely right. I would just argue that at the end of the day, as everyone views this season as just jacked up, that no one's going to criticize you for doing the wrong thing, not nearly as much as they would if it was a regular situation.
All right, let's go to the NBA here, LZ. DeMarcus Cousins is not on a roster right now. He's getting a little bit of interest. The Lakers should bring back DeMarcus Cousins. Take it or shake it.
Take it. Lord Jesus, take it. Take it, sign it, make it part of your rotation.
Why?
Boogie was hurt. He was out of shape. He was barely making up and down the court. And he still contributed to the Golden State Warriors' only victory in the finals last year. That's how talented he is. That's how good he is. He was still a huge factor in a win in the finals, and he was out of shape, hurt, and gasping for air. So I can only imagine what magic he may be able to give the Lakers in a brief period of time that can help them in a critical moment when he's not out of shape, when he's healthier, and when he's had an opportunity to actually be around a team for an extended period of time in which he's gotten to know the players. So, yes, the Lakers should definitely make a run at that because he's that good still.
All right, one more baseball one right here. Somebody will hit 400 in a 60-game season. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Oh. I mean,
what was Cody Bellinger batting through 60 games? 700?
Just about. But you know what? He wasn't batting 400 through 60 games. That no one has batted 400 through 60 games since Chipper Jones did it about 500 years ago. It doesn't happen very often. It happens more often than doing it over 162 games. But even through 60 games, that's damn hard.
It is hard. I will say, you know, everyone that we've had on as a guest in the baseball world, when you ask them who's going to have the most difficult time getting in shape, they all say the pitchers. So if the pitchers are going to struggle early on, that might be an opportunity for guys like a Mike Trout or a Harper or a Mookie to get fat early on. And then coast, you know, the last 10 to 15 games to 400.
Yeah, it's going to be so weird. This is another thing that baseball got all wrong by doing this and waiting this long, that you're going to have weird stuff happen because guys are going to push too hard. Pitchers are going to push too hard. Guys are going to get hurt. You're going to have guys that probably shouldn't be in the major leagues in the major leagues. Somebody's going to get hot and put up some bananas numbers. And this whole thing is just going to be the goofiest, silliest thing, which brings us to the last one. If the Dodgers win the World Series, it doesn't count. Take it or shake it.
Shake it!
Come on,
yeah,
shake it!
Yeah, man, Travis,
it's going to count in L.A., and if it counts in L.A., it's going to count in New York, and if it counts in New York and in L.A., Chicago, and if it counts in Chicago, New York, and L.A., it counts everywhere, baby.
Counts in Houston.
That's how this thing works.
I hope you're right.
Think about it. The Knicks haven't won since the 70s, but because New York talks about them all the time, the world keeps talking about them. So just imagine if there is a Yankee-Dodger World Series, New York's going to talk about them. We're going to talk about them. That means everybody's going to talk about them, so it's going to count.
How about the Twins and the Braves? I hope you're right. All right, Carl Douglas, friend of the program, is going to join us next. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.